Blog Talk Radio.
Days today, a few deaths, and some interesting events. But since a historian, and was also a musician, and some other things, one of my interests are animals and their service, treatment, and fate in war. And of course, I saw the film War Horse, which is actually the incident is fictional, but what's horses throughout military history and throughout the wars of the world, the world's war, not the world's of the world, that's space. We should look at that, and it's a very poignant issue. Some of the horrible things even the Nazis did in when they invaded Russia and had to retreat. They had to draft horses that were used for the beer, the Oktoberfest. And here they were drafted into service in the coldest winter to hit Russia. Horrible things happened, and these were pampered horses. But this is a rare, exclusive interview. It's the only interview that Trevor Howard did in his 84 years. I thank the Australian consulate and government for referring me to him, because nobody knew that he lived in San Jose, California. Anyway, he is a very unique man. He was in the British Army at the Battle of the Somme. He was a lieutenant in the Guards, and he survived that. He was a lieutenant at in the Guards at Gallipoli. He survived that, and after the war, there was a depression in England. He legally immigrated to the United States, became a U.S. citizen. In 1940, the call went out for there were about 10,000 British officers living in the United States. And they were requested to join the military to train. Roosevelt knew there was a war coming, and this is one of the issues that would need to be discussed and explored further, the correct history. Anyway, he became a colonel in the U.S. Army and was in charge of a WAC division, Women's Army Corps, up here in just south of San Francisco, and that's a story in and of itself. But anyway, he talks about what happened to the horses at the Battle of the Somme, and it's not something that Steven Spielberg or anybody else really got into. So here is Trevor Howard.
Trevor, when you were in France on the Somme in World War I, did anything happen with animals that you can recall?
Yes, a very dreadful thing. Whether it was in 16 or early 17, I don't know. But my little unit, smoke unit, was out of the trenches resting. And I was awakened before dawn by a clickety-clank sound. And I looked out of my tent, and there was cavalry going up towards the front line. Well, they got slaughtered. They got through the first lot of barbed wire, which had been pretty well blasted by the artillery. But the artillery hadn't done enough job on the second load, and they got all tangled up, and those beautiful horses were slaughtered right and left. Thank God I didn't actually see it. But all I know is that for 2 months after that, the whole British Army ate horse meat.
I guess that beats bully beef.
I'm not so sure.
That was just an excerpt for an hour-long interview I did with him, an exclusive. He never did an interview. Nobody ever approached him in his 84 years to talk about, give a historical account of his experiences in both World War I and World War II. Among the other interviews we did, this is a woman veterinarian, and they're not often interviewed. And, of course, since we have an interest in horses, she talks about why young girls seem to like horses. This is Dr. Linda Mary, who has a practice with her husband, I think in Idaho.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to Animals and Ideas. Today, the idea is women and minorities in veterinary medicine. My guest is Dr. Linda Mary, the American Animal Hospital Association delegate from the Northwest. She and her husband operate a veterinary partnership in Idaho. I asked her if there is equality among the sexes.
There will never be equality among the sexes.
Oh, that was short and sweet.
We're not going to say who's better.
That's me. We are seeing more and more women come into the profession. Is there economic parity, or can they expect economic parity at some point?
Yes, I definitely think that there is going to be economic parity in the profession. There is not right now any more in the veterinary profession than there is anywhere else in any of the professions, a parity between male and female salaries. But I think as we go along that is, the gap is closing, and I think it will close.
So if a young woman today wanted to, or was considering a veterinary medicine, their bright economic prospects and job placement prospects?
I would certainly not advise veterinary medicine as a wonderful field if you're looking at economics, whether it be you male, female, because this is a field that is unfortunately overcrowded right now. It is a field that is facing some problems because our animal populations are going down, our number of veterinarians are going up. But my decision would be not based on sex at all, simply based on career choice.
Do you think that women bring special innate qualities to the practice of veterinary medicine?
I think women and men alike have certain things that they bring just based on the fact that we are different individuals. I do feel that women bring an empathy, and I think that women bring a quality of being able to communicate well, which they always do. We know that. That's a fact for the difference between men and women. Women do communicate well. We have one advantage in small animal medicine, and that is that most pets are brought in by women. And sometimes it's very nice to be able to relate to them. It is also true that if an animal is particularly bonded to a female, they may be much easier for another female to handle. But the reverse can be true. Sometimes we have an animal that is particularly bonded to a male, in which case it's sure nice to have a male on the staff, around the house.
What would you explain a young woman's motivation for considering veterinary medicine? Do you think it's something that's glandular changes of pubescence?
Well, I think that ultimately you would find as many different reasons for women joining the profession as you do for men, because we're all individuals and we're all individually motivated. But there certainly is a time of life about the age of 12 when most girls seem to fall, many girls fall in love with horses rather than boys. And at that age, my husband is a large animal practitioner. He always says that the girls that fall in love with him when they're horse crazy at 12, by the time they get old enough to be interesting, they've outgrown it. And most of them do outgrow the wish to be a veterinarian.
Is that a rural or an urban observation?
Well, that comes from my being a city girl, but living in the country.
Tune in next edition for some more down-home practical career observations from my guest, Dr. Linda Mary of Idaho. Thanks for listening. This is Peter Paul. Hello, my friends. This is Peter Paul. Welcome to Animals and Ideas. Today, in part two of the idea of women and minorities in veterinary medicine, my guest is Dr. Linda Mary, who, in partnership with her husband, operate a veterinary practice in Idaho. Here, she gives some more down-home career advice to women. Are we beginning to see more and more minority women coming into the profession?
We are seeing more and more minority women coming into every profession. But, yes, and in fact, we have had a program, a preceptorship or internship that has been sponsored by the Bureau of Indian Affairs at one time in our hospital. We are close to an Indian reservation. And one of the young ladies was placed there with us because she showed an interest in veterinary medicine, and they funded her completely. Now, the reason for this, these people are being sought after as they are in any place that affirmative action is going on, and this is a matter of economics. The universities would give their ITs to have a minority female because it gives them a double cross action there. They kill two birds with one stone.
That's a bad pun. But you're from the country. But getting back to the affirmative action sort of thing, even with the shift in political philosophy and practice where the emphasis is less on quotas and more on individual quality, we're seeing more minority women. Is that what you're saying?
Well, we're talking about the universities as an acceptance process. We are not talking about the public as accepting these people. You are asking me about their entering the field. The place they enter is at the university level, and the universities are largely federally funded.
Uh-huh. To wrap up, Doc, what practical tips and observations would you give to a young male or female, since we believe in equality, who is considering going into the veterinary field? Should they consider being a veterinarian or an animal health tech or some of the other fields, dog groomer?
My feeling is that you must closely examine what you want out of life and what you're willing to put into life. I counsel many people against veterinary medicine, particularly women, because it is a field that you may not leave once you enter it. If you leave the field, our field is progressing in a medical sense so rapidly, the technology is just multiplying, that in order to leave that field, for example, and take a leave of absence to rear children, you would practically have to go back to school again in order to start over, come back into the field. Now, an animal health technician does not have that problem because they are under a veterinarian supervision, and therefore their skills are not dependent on their learning the latest method of doing heart surgery. So that is less of a problem to them, and for a woman, this may be where they would prefer to be. But again, you must judge to you what is going to be important, and I have always felt that this is an extremely difficult thing to ask of a 17-year-old when they start in, because by the time you graduate from veterinary school at the age of 25 or 26, you're not going to be the same individual you were at 17, and yet at 17, you made that commitment.
This is a more practical question, Doc. Housewives complain of dishwater hands. Do women who work in the veterinary field have any particular physical occupational hazards to look out for?
We have scrub brush hands from scrubbing for surgery, but so do men. Some days my hands look terrible. It's from scrubbing for surgery two or three times in a day. There are some problems associated with with large animal medicine more than small animal medicine. Some things you can get around, and we do get around, by using drug tranquilization and restraint. But nonetheless, there's a certain amount of physical quality required to this. I never realized how very difficult and demanding small animal practice is. We lift 50-pound dogs around all day long, morning to night. I'm hauling a dog most of the time. It's not a dog, two cats, but it is physically demanding work.
Well, that was a wonderful interview I did with this very charming veterinarian, a woman who obviously loves what she was doing at the time, and I hope she's still doing veterinary medicine. Here are some of the birthdays today. We have the guy who, very unusual name, he invented the first, or designed the first transatlantic ship, a guy named Ismabara Klingon Brumel. I didn't know too much about him. I didn't have enough time to look him up. And then, of course, this famous French writer, Baudelaire. And if you ever saw the movie Music Man, his name comes up. Hermione Gingold plays the head of the Library Commission in this Iowa town. And she complains about these books. Among them was Baudelaire, kind of dirty books. French author was born on this day. And then the guy who invented motion, studying people and motion in photography, Edwin Muybridge. He came up in an interview that I did with Dr. Jock Anderson, a horse equine specialist. We had his interview earlier this year as part of our Carson Brazola audiovisual print historical archives. This name comes up in electricity and the science and physics. Charles Steinmetz, born today. This is one of the great German generals. World War One. It was General Ludendorff, who was chief of staff, number two man to von Hindenburg, who later became president of Germany, didn't trust Hitler. But it was conned into putting Hitler, accepting Hitler into the cabinet. And Hitler, of course, took over when Hindenburg died. But Ludendorff was, after World War One, he became an extreme right winger and was one of the people who was involved in foundation Nazism in Germany, supported the Nazis. Erich von Ludendorff, and he was probably the tactical genius behind the Kaiser's army when they fought the Russian Juggernaut at Tannenberg. Great general, but political misfit. Leon Blum, Jewish heritage, was the first socialist premier of France during the 30s. He brought about workday changes and holidays, was responsible for these long holidays for French workers, and it was his socialist government. Later replaced by Daladier and Paul Reynaud, those people, and of course Marshall Pétain. Anybody who was anybody in music, the arts, had to go through Saul Hurak. I think Hurak was a Russian immigrant, and he had the biggest and the best and the most connected artist management organization in the country, operate, I think, out of New York. Another great artist, born in Russia, Ephraim Zimbalist, a great violinist. He probably went through Saul Hurak, but he had a son, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., who was a TV star in these, I think, detective or crime movies. I think he also had a daughter named Zimbalist. Great, probably the most talented black American of his time. We don't use African American as a term because not all blacks come from Africa. And there are all kinds of black people, some who come from Sri Lanka, southern India, the Philippines, even in our Caribbean. Paul Robeson was born today in 1898 in Princeton, New Jersey. He died January 23rd, 1976. He was a studied law, was successful, He was a great athlete. He was a great singer, a great actor, social activist, and became a communist dupe, unfortunately. He had his passport lifted. He had many great recordings and several films. Unfortunately, I thought I had found his archival talk on Shakespeare, but we'll probably have it Wednesday. I'm having some problems with this lately. Ward Bond was born today. A great actor. He was in The Sullivans. He played the Navy captain, commander, who brought the bad news to the Sullivan family. This was an Irish ethnic family, heritage family, living in Iowa. All five sons went to the Navy, served on the same ship, went down together, I think, at the Battle of the Coral Sea. A ship was named after them. Also, it has a connection to the Steve Nery case, a U.S. Navy sailor whose case we are still working on and will continue till he gets his freedom and exoneration. He was a kid who was raped, stalked, lured, raped, drugged, and abused in a city prison here in San Francisco. One of the worst cases in American jurisprudence. It ain't over. Anyway, Ward Bond had this great bass voice, and like Paul Robeson, and he starred in several films, even cowboy films. The connection to the Steve Nery case and the Sullivans is that the executive officer on the USS Sullivan was Captain Vincent Averna, who also studied law, was a judge advocate general, and he volunteered his time on the Navy regulations, the material I gave him, over the last 15 years. We believe in giving credit to the people who deserve it, not only deserve, but volunteer their time. Credit and recognition of people's efforts is like fertilizer. You fertilize a field, you get a bounteous crop. If you don't, you get manure. J. William Fulbright was born today, and the Fulbright scholarships are named after him and his family. And he was, for a long time, chairman of, he was from Arkansas, and segregationist, and for a long time was chairman of the Senate, U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee. One of the great music conductors who came from Middle Europe, as we have many of our musicians and conductors, music conductors of the great symphony orchestras, came from Middle Europe. People like Fritz Reiner from Hungary, George Zell from Hungary, Rudolf Serkin, was German actually. We had Leo Bleck. Otto Klemperer, his personal experience with his granddaughter who operated on me. And a lot of these people, Anton Durati was Hungarian, who conducted the Minneapolis Symphony Orchestra for many years. And his predecessor was Eugene Ormany, or Jano Blau, who conducted the Minneapolis Symphony Orchestra and then went to Philadelphia for nearly 40 years. All of our great musicians from that period came from that part of Europe, Germany, Austria, people like Eric Weinstorff. And it's a subject which is dear to my heart since I did study classical music. Unfortunately, my career was cut short, very short, because of an injury. Abe Rubikoff, who I remember in the 1968 convention, when he denounced Mayor Daley for Gestapo tactics in the streets of Chicago. Later, he had to back down because Daley did, him and Walter Cronkite did that. And the guy from Texas, God, I forgot his name, used to be on CBS. Anyway, Dan Rather, who is part Native American, incidentally. Rubikoff was connected to someone who worked on the Steve Nery case, whose family also came from Middle Europe, a Jewish family, Nate Ratner, who was distantly related to the Rubikoffs. Senator Rubikoff was a senior senator from Connecticut, and one time his name came up as a vice presidential prospective nominee. So I'm in Chicago. We started Playboy. One of his first bunnies went to my boarding school, Bonnie Halpin. We also thought she was going to become a nun. One of the great humorists, political satirists, went to Harvard. Tom Lehrer, born today. Paul Krasner of the Yippies, a great French actor with this, who had a broken nose, Jean-Paul Belmondo, Probably his most famous film is That Man from Rio, a great film with Francois Dordiac. And then Brandon DeVilda, whose career was cut short by auto accident. Among the deaths today, Lorenzo de' Medici, the great de' Medici family, bankers, artists, patrons of the arts, died today. Francois Rabelais is another name that came up in The Music Man, a writer of dirty prose. And Tammy Wyatt died today, great singer. I think she had a blood clot. Among the great events, this involves expiration of the United States. Robert de La Salle, Frenchman, in 1682, claimed what became Louisiana. He claimed it for France. It's one of our great buys. And then Captain Cook declared Australia or Botany Bay for England in 1770, and then that became the dumping ground for all the, what the British considered a social flotsam, people who couldn't pay their debts, the prostitutes, kids who were caught stealing. When the United States won its independence from Britain, the British had no place to dump their prisoners, so they took them to Australia, where they were treated horribly. A great book, The Far Shore, highly recommended. I think it's Robert Hughes was the author. In 1833, the first U.S. tax-supported library was set up. On this day in 1865, Lee surrendered to Grant. 1866, Andrew Johnson, who succeeded Lincoln, he vetoed the first civil rights bill, but his veto was overturned by Congress. Hudson Bay Company, here's another territory up in the northwest of Canada, they ceded their territory to Canada, which was still run by the British, and Hudson Bay is now a big commercial outfit in Canada. Also, dried milk was invented on this date. The first egg rolling contest, where Lemonade Lucy Hayes, the wife of President Hayes, she was the first one to ban alcohol in the White House, so they had an egg rolling contest instead. She's one of our political animals. Color film was demonstrated on this date. One of the what the radical left considers a judicial lynching. Sacco and Vanzetti, two were accused anarchists from Italy, accused of, I think, a bombing in Massachusetts. They had a kangaroo court trial, according to their supporters, even today. They got the death sentence and were executed. Mae West, who, believe it or not, was a Roman Catholic, and who never showed anything that could be considered obscene, but she was a bit risque. She did her film Diamond Lil, which got into trouble for that. Turkey, under Ataturk, declared there will be separation of church and state, so Islam was not the official religion of Turkey. In 1942, at this date, Bataan fell, and Raoul Amundsen was just gone into the U.S. Army as a legal officer. He escaped Bataan Corregidor with his pregnant wife and became a freedom fighter against the Japanese. And then Jomo Kenyatta, another freedom fighter, was given a 7-year sentence in Kenya by the British. The British still ran it. And Churchill was honored as an honorary U.S. citizen on this day. And another Illinois governor, who later was Otto Kerner, was later appointed a judge of the Federal Appellate Court, Seventh Circuit, out of Chicago. He was convicted of what he did as a governor in a racetrack financial scandal involving Theodore Isaacs. And he appealed his conviction to the U.S. Supreme Court. They would not hear it, which they can do. And he served time and died in disgrace. He was a very prim man. I used to see him when I worked in the federal building. Well, we're going to end with our usual politics and poker. We'll be back Wednesday, and we'll try to find that bloody interview with Paul Robeson. And it's very interesting. So we'll end with our usual.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker. something that cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you
going
to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace Betts.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
This is Peter Paul Brazola, and here it goes. Signing off. We'll be back Wednesday at 4 o'clock. Hopefully you'll find that interview. Go to our Amicus Veritas, AmicusVeritas, YouTube site. We'll be updating some things, and we'll have the visuals with Colonel Trevor Hodges and a few other things. The bicycle agenda, what the Nazis did when they occupied Europe in World War II. It's Peter Paul Brazola. I'm getting part of my voice back. Good night.